And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yep. Well, here we are. We're in Henniker, New Hampshire at
the Dome. We're in the Dome. Here, I got to do my turn up. There it goes. Okay. Yeah, we got more. You know, this is how it works. I'm going to look up this George Carlin thing he did about your stuff.
So you get it right?
You got all your stuff. Then you got a smaller version of your stuff. You're going to, like, on a trip to Hawaii. Then you take a weekend trip over to Kauai from the Big Island or something like that, and you got a smaller version of your stuff. Then you go into the beach, you get a smaller version of your stuff. So we got the bus down being painted. We dropped it off this morning and everything, and we got everything in there, and it's a smaller version of my stuff now.
What color is the bus going to be?
It's going to be all white, okay. And then we're putting, you know,
logo on it.
Yeah, all the decals and everything on top of that. We were going to wrap it. But because it has so many rivets,
right?
You know, it just wouldn't hold right. It wouldn't look right.
And you get air pockets behind those rivets and condensation. And, yeah, that's what my uncle was telling me. He's like, if that thing's riveted, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. So we decided, we won't do that. And but it will be the same. And then the input from patrons and, you know, and everybody and kind of, white.
You know, hey, white's a good canvas for all the logos and stickers. Right. And the Love Evolution looks good behind white.
So, well, that was kind of the reason, you know, the Love Bus, it was always on white.
Right.
You know, so the white, because we had darker colors, and you made the black lettering would be white, and then you had the red Love, of course, and everything. So it's, and white kind of hides a bunch of more stuff. I'm going to be washing that thing all the time, though.
You'll actually be surprised. Black trucks look way dirtier, like
oh yeah, no, I know. I'm in freaking Arizona, man. Everything's white.
Right. Yeah, you were a car detail guy at one time.
Yeah, no, I'm still a car detail guy. Hell, I've been car detailing that freaking bus forever. You know, one thing we did with the stainless steel, we were going to wrap the whole thing, and the stainless steel is kind of rough, and I took 3,000 grit sandpaper and the Orbital and wet sanded the whole thing. Then I compound buffed it and then polished buffed it because, you know, I had the equipment and I know how to do it. But it's, you know, it's like $200 worth of supplies. Mm-hmm. You know, it was for 25 sheets of that 3,000, it was like $100 or something.
It's crazy.
It was like $6 a disc. I'm going, man, they're pretty proud of that stuff. I mean, it worked really good and it's 3M SOBs because they are, we got the best stuff. And it's going to cost you.
Well, they're probably not manufacturing any 3M's only manufacturing face masks for COVID, right?
No, they're manufacturing the disc in China probably anyway.
Oh, you can't get them anymore, yeah.
So the did that and then polished it up, and it kind of comes out like a mirror. I mean, I could get real anal about it if I wanted to. I mean, mm-hmm. I could, and I'm going, you know, I don't want to blind people. I don't want to get ticketed.
Well, like when you're driving down the road and at night and you get some of those reefer trailers, they get that high polish in the back doors, the refrigerated trailers, and it's just, you get it back off, and you'll know when your high beam's on, or sometimes the sun's behind you, and it's flashing off the truck in front of you because of that polish.
It starts sun oven baking you in your chair. You know, speaking of trailers, Jane Noon had to buy another trailer! You had another trailer! You know, all right.
We needed it.
For what? For what?
For moving hay, for moving equipment. You know, we've teamed up with the Bardos, or with the Smiths up at Bardo Farm, and it's about a 30-mile drive. and we need to haul stuff back and forth all the time. We're hauling.
You don't have enough trailers?
Well, this is a gooseneck trailer.
Oh, it's a gooseneck trailer.
So it handles a lot better. So when you take like a 3/4-ton single-wheel pickup truck and you put a tag-along behind it, a bumper pull, you know, at about 6, 7, 8,000 pounds, it gets a little squirrely, and at about 10,000 pounds, you're kind of wondering if you should be hauling this trailer with this truck with the bumper pull. Well, with the gooseneck, which is like the difference, which is, you know, it goes hooks up in the back like a fifth wheel does, but a gooseneck's got a ball. Fifth wheel's a little different.
So it kind of has this this gooseneck. It's a bridge that goes over the tailgate.
Yep. And so what it does, it hooks up like a few – the weight is a few inches.
Is it that black one by the school bus back there?
Actually, the trailer I bought is very similar to that. That's a trailer I got to fix for a friend. Oh, okay. It's another friend's trailer.
I went down there to look at the gun range and
kept on walking.
Whose bus is that?
That belongs to our buddy Bumps.
Oh,
you know Bumps.
Yeah.
And
okay.
She's actually talking about moving to Arizona part-time.
Really?
Yeah, I think she'll be here this weekend. But anyways,
right, cool. Be good to see her.
She got a good deal on that bus. It's low mileage. It's a nice bus. And
you drive around this property, you find more stuff.
Yeah.
It's in the jungle. And what's that? Shipping container that has that like room on it.
That sea container actually belongs to Rick, the guy who I bought the property from. That's his. Then actually, sea container's on the 42 acres. It's on his son's property. So you're off my property when you're where that trail.
Where
that,
you kept going down there.
Yeah. So you just the property line's about 15 foot in front of that sea container.
Okay. So anyways, all right, finish on gooseneck. So goosenecks
handle better because
it sits on top of the axle.
Because it sits in front of the axle a little bit. So when you put 1,000 pounds of weight on a tongue, you put like 900 on the rear axle and like 100 on the front axle. Where you put 1,000 pounds on a weight on a tongue of a gooseneck trailer, it puts like 1,500 pounds on the rear axle and takes like 500 pounds off the front axle or somewhere in that. So it doesn't handle quite as well. The gooseneck handle is really good. So with that same truck and basically the same trailer and a gooseneck, we can put about make that gooseneck trailer weigh about 17, 18,000, even 25,000 pounds, and it steers down the road just good. You just go slower, and you got to prepare to stop a little better because you're heavier. But it handles really good. Like when I took when Neil and I went on the first cattle run together a few months ago, we took my gooseneck stock trailer, and he had never used a gooseneck before, and he's like, "Wow, I don't even want to drive a bumper pull anymore because especially hauling cattle." They move around, and that can get real squirrely if you got, four or five cows inside of a bumper pole trailer when they start dancing in there. With the gooseneck trailer, it's just so much easier.
Dancing,
yeah. And they start moving around in the trailer because, and they weigh 1,200 pounds a cow, and they all start moving at the same time. You feel them.
One thing you have that, I guess it's, what do you call it? Livestock trailer?
Stock trailer.
And it's tall enough maybe to get a horse in?
Well, yeah, that's what we've used it for years, hauling horses. It's 7 foot tall.
Okay, so 7 foot. And then you had cows and pigs in there.
Mm-hmm.
They mix well?
No. It's got three compartments. It's got three sets. It's 7 foot wide, 7 foot tall, 24
foot
long.
How many doors does it have?
It's got two doors inside that swing close, and then they slide open. They have
How do you access it? You have to access it from the rear?
Yep. There's one front door on the left that you could I've walked horses through them. I've loaded cows and other livestock through the front door.
Okay, so the compartments, you can, take them out the front and still leave the back and not have to unload all that. So how long you had that trailer?
So my father passed away in 2012. And or 2013, I forget, I think. But anyways, he had a really nice horse show trailer, 4-horse head-to-head trailer. And we traded a friend of ours for this trailer. So I think we got this trailer in like 2013.
And it looks like it's holding up. Is it all galvanized or
it's
something?
Aluminum. It's all aluminum. I've welded it a lot. It needed a lot of welding when I got it.
Okay, that's one thing. I'm thinking as we were dropping off the bus, we're coming back, and I see everybody's got a big 350-something, It's big trucks around here. Trucks. Everybody's trucking. And I'm going, and they're nice, and you look, and the rocker panel and the quarter panel, everything's rusted.
Yep.
I'm going, screw that. I am so tired of Cybertruck. Stainless steel, aluminum, Cybertruck.
Yeah.
Electric, 600-mile range. It gets charged 30 miles a day just sitting there. You got Cybertruck. We got in line. I paid my $100. I got a triple motor kind of sitting there waiting on me. I'm going, nice. Cybertruck.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And we're back, right? Yeah. We're working on computers setting up for the Zoom with Tempachote in the next hour. And then the third hour, Rachel Goldsmith?
Yep.
Okay, and what's her claim to fame?
So Rachel's a free stater, a mama. She has been very helpful with the Free State Project. She even volunteered to be the, I think they call it, director of the head of the Free State Project. She did it for a couple of years. I worked with her quite a bit on some projects.
Rachel Goldsmith. I talked to her before. I know her.
Absolutely talked to her before at Liberty Forum. She wears glasses, has dark hair. Usually has a baby with her. Pretty girl.
I'm always thinking she had a baby.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
and. You know, but, well, that's good. We get to, she's going to come in, right?
She's going to come in, and her kids are going to come hang out and play with some piglets.
Sure, whatever.
Check some stuff out.
Yeah, it's a Dome Echo kids.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yep.
Yeah, we've been enjoying Cypress, your daughter. She's only 3-4 months old, and that's, she got personality.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to play.
Yep.
You know?
I always say she wants to party and hang out with everybody. That's what she wants to do, hang out with everybody.
You know, Shallon's in, I have baby prison. You know, it's like, you know, baby prison. You're like, Donna, we got a bunch of stuff to do, but Donna's making time so she has, like adult conversations and so on.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
She's very much enjoying Donna's company.
Well, it's because I know there's a lot of stuff to here to do, but it's work taking a baby all the time.
Yep.
It's baby prison, you know. But I never looked at it that way. I always saw... It was entertainment for me, especially grandkids. Grandkids way better, you know. The look you get to see them like, oh, we don't have a baby anymore. Oh, another one! Yay! You're getting kind of long in the tooth there. You're getting kind of old. You're 18 months. Oh, another baby! Yay! I mean, you know. So I tell you, when it's 18 months,
you say getting long in a tooth. Do you know where that comes from?
Horses or something.
So you say a lot of horse related things. You're like chomping at the bit, and you know, so getting long in a tooth, when you age a horse, their teeth never stop growing. So you can that's something I haven't done it in years, but I could be like within 6 months of the paperwork. My dad would say slice his mouth, so you just open up his lips, the horse's lips, and you look at his teeth, and then based on how long the tooth is and what the angle is, and you open up his jaw a little bit, you just kind of tickle their gum with your thumb, and they'll usually, or their tongue, and they'll open up their mouth, and you can see little cups in the teeth. And if they still have all the cups, and the teeth are kind of long, they're like 10 years old, but as the cups start to wear, they call them smooth mouth, and then the cups will all be kind of gone. That horse is like 12 to 15 years old. And so that's why they mean
long.
Well,
don't you also file the teeth?
Well, it's not the front teeth, the back teeth you do. It's called floating.
Yeah.
And what happens is because the back teeth grow also, and because a lot of people, the horses aren't grazing, they're eating grain and they're in stalls, the teeth don't get worn down as much. So some of the teeth start to grow, and they like pinch the gum, or they'll pinch the cheek, and they'll hurt. So like especially old horses, about every 6 months, you got to float their teeth a little bit. And now there's a lot of
float. Why do they call it float?
Because the tool's a float that you use, and it's like a long file. Well, it's only about 4 inches of file. But it's on like a 26-inch or a 30-inch like rod, basically. And you just run it up and down their tooth, and you spray like a little water in there, and you run it up and down their teeth. And some horses are so good, they'll just stand there and let you do it. Some of them,
I'm wondering which horses don't, you know, or hell, I'm more thinking the brain damage of a horse that'll let you do it.
It's the horse that you've done it to several times. So the first couple of times you do it to the horse, you give them a little tranquilizer, and then – basically, once they realize you're not going to hurt them, it feels goofy, you know. It's not like you're drilling teeth like at a dentist.
You see, this is conversation with Jay on everything. You can't ask him anything. It doesn't turn into a half-hour conversation about what were we talking about. I have no idea. I was talking to Jay.
So I'm long. It's so long in the tooth. 18-month-old baby.
18 months. Boom. One. Bring it back. You know, I got to have a note you know, pad and a piece of paper. Wait a minute, let me put where we were.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to get distracted.
At 18, with you.
Yes.
At 18 months is when you really start to see what they're going to look like, you know, when they get older. You can go, yep, that's, you know, at 16, they're going to, you know, kind of have the same eyes, kind of get the face shape and everything, and a personality. So we noticed that really with our first granddaughter. And all of a sudden, I had this one picture that was my favorite picture. It was a cell phone picture, and we did it in, like, black and white. It was a thing, you know. And it was sitting on the edge of the pool with my other daughter, her aunt. And it was, you know, small, probably 15% of the picture is her sitting there. You know, it's all – so we zoomed it in and got that was a portrait. So it's kind of grainy, black and white and everything. So it's kind of stylized a little bit, but that was the picture. And I go, 18 months, that's it. So every one of the kids, when they hit 18 months, we make sure we get a picture of them, and we go, yep, that's where they are. You know, you could see which kid it was. And especially when they're all cousins and, you know, we have a dominant feature. Our nose is from my mother's side of the family, the Dodge family, is just we all have the same nose. You know, it's just a dominant feature that kind of perpetuates throughout everything. And so you can see the family resemblance and all that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Cypress at 18 months. At 18 months, you go, yeah, we already know, you know, what that kid's going to look like at 20, you know. And then you'll see. Plus, you know, the personality is already developing. She's digging it. She wants to be with the adults, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, and she's fascinated by other babies. She just wants to giggle at them. Like Dylan comes over, and his son is a year and a half, and he's walking around, and he just when Cypress sees Makia is his name, and Makia means is like a Native American eagle hunter thing. Anyways, she just when she sees another baby, she gets all smiley and giggly and just looks at the baby and smiles.
Well, when we were doing the show in the bus, Carla Garrick was in. We were talking about Pork Fest yesterday, and holding her, and she was staring at the monitor.
Yeah,
you know that was her. You
right,
know?
Right. Yep.
And she's going, "Hey, that baby's doing. It's like watching a dog and a puppy in a mirror."
She's
you know,
amazed with mirrors.
So, yeah, I'm really glad that you know, when we found out you were having a baby, I'm going, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a Jay Noon baby.
It's so much fun.
Well, Jay and Shallon, you know, they got a good thing going on here. There's a lot of distraction, a lot of entertainment. It's also dangerous. You got to be careful, man. You're backing up and doing, there's going to be a squished dog or kid or somebody. Everybody's got to pay attention. You know, this is it's a thing. Even when I'm out in the lone prairie field out there, you're nervous. You know, and you're standing out there on the side of me holding Cypress one time, and I'm like, man, I'm paying attention, man. Ernie's on the backhoe. Oh, Silver Dave is out there. This is what happened.
Oh, that's who's running it right now?
Yeah.
Nice.
This is what happened. Silver Dave is Green Beret, you know, kind of never did heavy equipment. And I'm going, he's doing, ooh, I learned. I go, yeah. Can you shoot and reload from a loader? So he finally, because I was giving him crap, I'm going, don't you tell me how Green Beret you are. You can't run a bulldozer. What the hell? So yesterday he decided, a couple of the guys, Steve and Colin, went out there and showed him, and he was playing with it while I was out there. Now he's fixing the road to the gun range.
Nice.
Big boulders.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Cops, Karens, and the coming dystopia. This is definitely a Dr. Frank thing. He needs to look at this. You know, yeah, send that to him. That, like, four story. You know, send that to him. Say, this is from Ernie. You need to watch this. He's always sending me videos and everything. And it's from FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. There's a guy there that does it. It's called Out of Frame. And it's the kind of thing that I would do. I've been looking forward to doing. I saw it. I'm going, there you go. You know, I can pip the crap out of him. One less thing I got to do. Or I'll just rip him off, you know, in his style or whatever. But it was what I keep talking about. Is that being able to review and use movies to make points and not have to worry about copyright and how long a clip you use and all that. I decided, you know, it was just yesterday, I think, I sent something to Derek. Yeah, check your Telegram, Derek. You know, hello, Derek. You see there? All right, so we need to do the servers to do our own video. I'm tired of waiting on these guys. BitChute takes too long. Because I was talking, it was.
Are you going to put the server farm in the bus?
Hell no. No.
I mean, isn't this the whole point of IPFS so I can have my own little Raspberry Pi server here?
Oh, yeah. No, we can do that. You know, that you know, to have a server node, you know. But, yeah, if we're going to be – but it's not that it's in the bus. It's just one node. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you load it there, and then it seeds everything else, yeah. So it never goes away.
Kind of like Bitcoin nodes.
Right. Okay. No J Noon interruption so I can get through this.
Okay, go for it.
Because, man, we'll be off in the Titan here in a minute. So the God, where the hell was I?
No, servers.
Well, what we decided, we talked about it, Derek and I, and he's kind of, you know, it's kind of shying away. Oh, it's like work, man.
It's more work for him.
You know, but I go, I'm tired of waiting on DTube and DLive and DThis and BitChute and all these. The ones that work the best, of course, are the big platforms.
Right.
You know, Google, YouTube, and they go, oh, yeah, what we got going on? But you got to beat our community standards or whatever the hell that is. I just heard on Free Talk Live they were talking right before the show about Cell 411, the mm-hmm. app. You know, because what happens is you, instead of calling 911, you got an app on your phone, Cell 411 or whatever it is.
Cell 411, yep.
And when you do that, it notifies whoever you say in your contact list. You know, it goes to your, if you got a medical emergency, it may go to your neighbors, your next door neighbor. Hey, man, you know, come over and whatever. Or you got friends or family or whatever. You set your network based on whatever your emergency is, and then you pre-program it, or you hit, and boom, it's done. Not on hold. Not, we'll be there in the morning, we'll send grief counselors, you know, tomorrow morning kind of crap. You know, it's now, and they won't shoot your dog, okay?
Just got an alert on Cell 401 a couple of days ago, and it was the Colorado where I used to live. It's called North Hudson Cell 411 group, and it was about a grass fire. And a bunch of guys says, oh, I'm heading over there with the water truck. You know, so-and-so is heading over with the disc. The disc is a tillage tool because you till up the dead grass so it don't burn. And that's... I set that back up when I first moved to Colorado with all the farmers around there, and it all started over a lost dog. Somebody showed up, hey, have you seen our dog? This is what it looks like. I go, well, download this app, and you can share this with everybody, and let's go get all your neighbors on it, and that's what we did. And it's still active. And even around here, I don't know, once or twice a month, we actually, probably once a week, I get some Cell 401 police activity, Manchester, or there was a cruiser sitting down the road a tenth of a mile south of the domes. The other day, I got a... Cell 401 message. It is the Ware Henniker Cell 401 group, which we'll get you on it if you're here, or because you're here. And the guy's like, oh, cops sitting a tenth of a mile south of the domes on 114. And I just put, yeah, they're there all the time. Little spot over here. They pull off and take radar. So it's handy.
Well, what they said is that Google took it down on the Play Store.
Still works.
Yeah, no, it works, but you can't get it and updates, all that kind of stuff, because they don't have an off thing to put it on. Do you know why they took it down?
Because they don't like it.
No, well, of course. But, you know, the reason they gave is because, well, children have access to it.
So?
I know. I'm like, what?
There's way worse stuff on YouTube that's like...
I know. I'm like, what? Oh, that was another thing. On the you go on Freedom's Phoenix, top left, you scroll down, it says join us on Telegram. Well, that goes to the Declare Your Independence Telegram. And they're pretty active in there. There's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, 70-something people in there last time I looked, and they give it what for. But the one of the guys goes, well, thanks, LRN. Now my kids know about blowjobs. From the Onion. You know, they
Onion.
Have these things.
Yeah.
And the thing that's unique, I got to talk to Ian about this when we get up Pork Fest. So I'm going, Ian. He's on my, oh, I heard you said a naughty trash can word. I just need to know if we put you in, you know, explicit, not friendly, safe, friendly, family friendly show or something, right? Some classification he puts Declare Your Independence in. And I'm going, Well, when you got the Onion talking about blowjobs, I mean, I'm wondering that kind of blows the crap out of, you know, family listening anyway. So Jeremy, I'm sorry, man. You know, I know Donna hates that crap too. So I'm going to say, can you tone down some of the commercials, you know? Because sometimes I'll have people, I have guests, you know, prominent guests, you know, big, you know, blah, 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 on. They're listening at the top of the hour news break. And then that 1 minute, you know, they come in with the Onion thing. And some of those I'm like,
yeah,
damn.
Some of those things are a little racy.
Yeah, they go, what show am I going on here, you know?
They're all FCC compliant, though, I believe. They don't have any of the seven magical words in any of their – they blip them out, you know.
But the Play Store doesn't, like, sell 411.
So you can – so can you still go to getsell411.com?
They're doing something to put – no, you can't. They didn't have the download. They had it only on the Play Store. That was the problem. They didn't do a separate download.
Oh, I thought you could download directly from their website.
That's what they were saying, that you couldn't or something.
Huh.
But of course, they got to fix that. That's what they're, you know, talking about. They're
going, you know, and, you know, and in my phone, it's just it's the cheapest phone you could buy at Walmart because they break them all the time. And the Google Play Store app keeps on loading with it says 0.96 gig of cache, like every 4 days. And I keep on deleting the data, deleting the cache in that app. And I've actually tried to disable that app. It won't let me. Because I don't even want it. So I can't wait to buy a phone that doesn't, you know, rely on Google.
They're really pushing, you know, making sure that you don't. I mean, you just want it. I just want a freaking, you know, handheld computer that I can do it with. Nope, not allowed. They don't want to lose because they know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll be a flood, an exit, mass exodus of suck it. This is what we found out on the bus. We did. We've been testing a lot of different things. Luke Radowski and I have been, you know, kind of exchanging back. He said he may go to a fifth wheel.
Nice.
You know, it's kind of do.
I really want to talk to him before he buys something, because a lot of people just make huge mistakes, and I'm like, dude, I would have told you not to do that. Just in buying.
Yeah,
campers.
You need to work with Jay on this stuff. Yeah, you know, help you out. Yeah, I'll hook you guys up. Remind me, and we'll get you guys together. And then he said he's probably going to come to Porkfest.
Good.
You know, but internet. So he goes, what are you doing for internet? Oh, Ernie, hey, man, you're a buddy, pal of mine. You know, because always whenever we have some, I let him use it to upload his stuff or whatever. And he's going, yeah, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh. You know, the service keeps changing. Oh, we didn't get to talk about that. Carla started and we got distracted. I think Jay said something and then we got off of it.
Sorry. I distracted you with the baby.
You know, right, you did.
Yeah.
You know, remember she was talking about, she was talking to the internet provider up
right
there. You know, and I don't know what the conclusion of that was. Because what happened, Derek went up there and he's
ask
like,
her tonight.
Okay, yeah, we're going to go have dinner at their home. And so what Carla was complaining about is that this guy that has the internet has an exclusive contract at Rogers Campground.
Mm-hmm.
But it sucks. It always has sucked. It hasn't worked for crap. So Derek went up and he contracted on the mountain somewhere some microwave signal.
For this year?
No, a few years ago. And he had it come in, and then he broadcast it out, and he sold for like $25 an account so the businesses could actually take crypto and run his, you know, vending machine and all this other stuff. The guy freaked. You're not allowed to fix it. You fixer? We'll be right back.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From?
To break free from your lies.
I'm covering the secrets and exposing the lies. I love doing that. You know? What I want to break free from? The lies. You know, I just got
to
break free from them. We're going to uncover. I'll get into the server thing real quick, but I want to read this. It's a meme a friend of mine sends out every day, these memes that, you know, are not safe for work memes usually, but they're kind of funny. But you know, a lot of them good, you know, thought-provoking political speech here. It has a guy just, you know, he's wearing like a suit and, you know, he's got his hands in his pocket with his coat back, and you see a handgun in his waistband of his nice belt. And it says, 25 states... out of 50, 25 states allow anyone to buy a gun, strap it on, and walk down the street with no permit of any kind. Some say it's crazy. However, 4 of the 5 U.S. murders are committed in the other half of the country. So who's crazy? And then Jay says, I bet you that one was a suicide. but you know, or and so this is, I'm, it's like, well, there's another meme here that kind of puts it up. Truth is hate to those that hate the truth. You know, there's so much of this stuff, and the, it just shows the left can't meme. I mean, what are they going to say? All right, Jay, you
so
raised your hand.
Just to understand why I say suicide is, when you look at the gun statistics, like, I don't know if it's most, or but there's like most, a lot of it is suicide. Is suicide a homicide? Do you not have the right to take your own life? So they're lumping in suicides with calling them gun homicides on, like, the databases.
You know, that was an important – all right, I give you a short story here. A really good close friend of mine shot himself, but it was because he had Lou Gehrig's disease, and he drug it out as long as he could. He spent a bunch of money. He tried to get help. Even Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, helped him with some protocol. They did. We tried. Once you get that, man, there's no coming back from that one. And he knew it. He'd give it the full try, but and he's just a very talented guy. He's one of us. He had plenty of resources. He did it's called East-West Productions, where he did site selection and everything on commercials, you know, like Frito-Lay and, you know, Nike and all that. I mean, those big things, you know, in Arizona, whenever you saw a commercial in Arizona, a lot of times he's the guy who set it up. And what happened was he got this a couple of years ago, and he's like, and it was going down fast. He, like, you know, had weakness in his left leg. He was limping a little. I go, what'd you overwork? Because he'd work out and everything. The guy was looking good. He's jacked up. And kind of John Denver-y kind of guy, you know, looking haircut, you know, and played guitar. He was in a band. He was just one of my good friends and just a good guy. You know, one of us. I mean, you'd like him.
Yep.
Well, he inherited a big, giant gun safe full of guns from a friend of his that had depression issues.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know, he, you know, so because he didn't want to be a gun statistic.
I know the deal.
He hung himself, okay?
Oh.
So he, you know, went in and just, he goes,
oh, geez.
Just because he didn't yep. want to, you know, buy in because he was a gunny guy, he goes, look, I'm done with this thing. He portioned out all his stuff. Eric, you get the gun safe and the guns. Peace out. Hung himself. Okay, that's sad, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's better chemical ways to do it.
Okay, well, this is where we're going. Let me finish.
Sorry.
So what happened was Eric gets his disease, and he goes, at some point, they're going to have to put a feeding tube in me, you know, or an air breathing and whatever, and I'm just going to be in a chair, and I can't do anything. And it was getting to that point. It got to where he couldn't be by himself. He had to have help all the time. And he goes, when it gets to that point, and he wrote this blog, he just kept, you know, a celebration of his life. He told all about all his activity and everything, you know, all his friends are in there, different things and pictures of kind of was, it's a really good, I couldn't bring myself to read it, you know, until the end. So I just go visit him, you know, we go over and hang, and Donna would make heat bags for him and stuff because he had all these spasms and pains and all that kind of stuff. Well, finally, I talked to him about a week before. I'd always send him, you know, inspiring things of new medical whatever from Freeman's Phoenix. I go, look, they're doing this. Look, they got this. They got that. We had Dr. Judy working, doing different protocols. He's trying all kinds of stuff. And a lot of Dr. Judy was like, whoa, you can't do that and this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's kind of, you know, the different thing. But anyway, he was trying everything. It got to the point, and all of a sudden, boom, he shot himself, even though he's a gunny guy. But what he did a few days before he did it, he wrote up a thing, and he gave statistics. And he goes, if you do prescription, you only have a 72.6%, you know, of you actually die. You have, if you do this, this happens. If you do this, this happens. If you do this, but it's a faux show. You do a bullet to the head, you're done, man. You know,
oh, right, right.
You know, okay. So it's a 97.99, whatever the hell it was. A high D goes, look, man, I'm not taking any chances here. It's not, you know, sorry, guys, but this is my, you know, and that's why he did it. Because he wanted a faux show. Because it was just getting to the point that he couldn't hold a firearm. When he goes, when I can't do that, then I'm not going to be in control anymore. and he wanted to control it into his life. So that is – so when you say gun suicides, sometimes it's just the highest percentage, best way of, you know, I don't want attention. You know, I'm not going to, like, you know, take a couple of extra sleeping pills. I want to, you know, flip the switch, you know. So that's what happened. And it's just – and it was sad, too, because we were consolidating all our stuff and, you know, ready to go. And he left me a bunch of books and everything. You know, it's there, you know, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that he left me. And I even need to go through it. You know, he might have a little, you know, little secret, you know, letter in there or something, you know. Yep. So, you know – we got to get to that in a year. So the server thing. All right, Derek, this is what I need. We went on last Tuesday, I think it was. Tim Pachote, that's coming on next hour, hooked me up. We'll probably be talking about it. It was a invitation, you know, a bunch of influencer talk shows, whatever, you know, but I kept coming up about the IPFS and James Corbett was on there. And, you know, oh, let's get Ernie on. So, you know, we were eating dinner and everything. So Jay and I went on. So Jay got to talk and tell him, hey, man, we're solution to food. We didn't know there was a two-minute limit when you're supposed to go, yep, you should have told Ernie and Jay that. But it was towards the end, and they were looking for solution stuff anyway, so it was all good. But the I asked him, I go, so what's your guys' platforms? What's the alternative? What's working other than YouTube? Well, there isn't one. You know, I mean, you know, BitChute works. You know, all these other work, but they take so long to upload. They're not fast. You know, library, everything is just, it's just a pain. It float. It's just a pain in the ass. So I'm going, all right, how are we going to do this? Is it going to get faster? Are they going to? I said, you know, I'm tired of waiting. So, Derek, we talked about it. I want to put our own videos on our own servers, which is what Corbett does in the MP4 files anyway, which we can do. You know, we have... Right where I put my MP3, I can put the MP4. It just takes more space, a lot more space. So, you know, memory's starting to get cheap. Bandwidth is getting better. You know, we've got, man, they can kind of get you on that too. And we interface it with IPFS so that it's permanently logged there. We have our own servers. We might kind of open it up to other people. Might even charge a subscription, you know, get on different servers. So I want to go video because they had their chance. And Donna's ready to freaking jump ship if she has to sit there staring at a screen one more freaking hour a day, you know? So this is what we need to do to load the video. If we're going to be doing streaming in the video and everything, we need to be able to load it ourselves. And we'll do it MP4, whatever we're going
to
do.
So, like, if I make a video, I need to be able to load my video. Luke needs to be able to load his video. James Corbett loads his own video. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, James does.
Okay.
You know, he has. When we do the IPFS, we're pulling the MP4 from his site. We're not doing it from YouTube. Now, on Luke, we were scraping the YouTubes, you know, but these guys, it was all testing. It was all just to prove the concept. Mm-hmm. Now that we proved the concept and the Plandemic movie thing came out, and we talked to Dr. Judy Mikovits, what was it, day before yesterday, I think, or whenever it was, and she's like, yeah, when the Plandemic movie comes out, we want you to get first crack. We're going to give it to you, Freemus Phoenix, first because you helped him solid and did and kind of peace out. I go, done.
Nice.
We need the video servers because when they were, it went viral, and when nobody could get it, the only place you could get it was the IPFS that we had. I go here. You can download the file. Then you guys can load it up wherever you want and peace out because they couldn't even get it to download it to something, you know, so because it was gone. So this is, we did this because we knew this was coming. And it, oh, you know, the guy who walked around with a sandwich board sign and said, the end is nigh. Well, he's right now. The end is nigh. There's a bunch of stuff. You know, I was thinking, we went to the general store up there. We dropped off the bus on the way back. We got a breakfast sandwich at the general store up there or whatever. And they're still wearing masks and everything. And, you know, I'm going, I didn't even want to get into it. I didn't have time. I'm just wondering, when the hell are you guys going to take... Who is going to tell you to take the mask off? Who's telling you you have to wear? Where is that coming from? We're going to find out. Tim Pachote, next hour. Be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me,
but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Jay's daughter, Cypress, is in saying, yo, what's up? And she can see the screen, and we're looking at Tempachote. Tempachote! He's there.
And my daughter, so yeah.
And your daughter. Hello. Is that Summer?
She can't. No, it's Bria. I've got headphones in, so she can't hear you say hello. Okay. So.
Hello. All right. We're going to talk the Liberty Report, LibertyAdvisor.com, LibertyAdvisor.com. Now, we're not doing streaming, but we got them on Zoom here. We got, like, stuff. We got a small version of we're doing the audio, small version stuff. But, you know, this is good information, especially a day after. I stopped paying attention after it dropped, like, 1,200 points on the Dow. I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's a Tuesday. I don't care. It's just my silver does better. So I looked at that, and I go, yep, you know, here we go. And I don't even think this is it. I mean, when it drops like 8,000 points or something, 10,000, zero, maybe I'll care. But something is happening. Tim, what happened?
Well, nowadays you can't even have it drop 8,000 points because they have all these different circuit breakers and things they do to manipulate the market, and you'd have the plunge protection team come in. But, you know, essentially the government – is not willing to endure any short-term pain and everything and anything. So they're going to end up making this problem a lot bigger. And so, you know, what you're having now is people buying into this narrative that, you know, we've got a V-shaped recovery and things really were great. And we just, you know, turned off this rip roaring economy. And now all we need to do is turn the dial back on, get the economy open back up, and back to business as usual. And so off the backs of that, I mean, what I'm thinking is going on.
Yeah, $28 trillion in debt doesn't matter.
Yeah, that took like 35 days to add that extra $1 trillion. I mean, I would say only, like under Obama, it was taking like 11 to 14 months for every trillion, only 11 months. And now it's 35 days. And I think Mnuchin came out maybe yesterday or the day before and said something to the effect of, yeah, we're ready for, you know, basically to put another $1 trillion in, you know, essentially to support the stock market. And as part of my Anarchapoco speech, which I hate, you know, keep bringing this up, but that has so many relevant things in that talk that I did talk about, you know, I did talk about some different tweets they were putting out in January where they were calling people like you and me QE conspiracists. And what that meant was that we were people who were crazy enough to think that there was a correlation between the Federal Reserve money printing and the stock market. And they were – it's funny because that's the –
Well, you know you're right when they call you a conspiracy now.
And this was – and it was Neil Kashkari, who was actually the Minneapolis Fed president, which, you know, it's fitting that all this, you know, riots were getting kicked off in Minneapolis. But, yeah, it was him and then Bill Dudley, the former New York Fed chair, were both calling people conspiracy theorists for, you know, insinuating this. And now, I mean, one of the craziest stories I see right now is that Hertz rental car, which, you know, is bankrupt. Now, there's a few crazy sides of the story. One is that the Federal Reserve had indirectly bought their bonds through buying some of the ETFs. So this is the Fed buying. Now, it's technically, I guess, not the Fed. It's some other BS investment vehicle that they set up. But yeah, it's the Fed coming in.
Well, they did a bunch of these bonds. I remember when they, you know, oh no, the Fed doesn't buy treasuries. That would be wrong or illegal or something. They kept saying they didn't. I'm like, then who the hell
they
is
don't
this?
Buy them directly from the Fed. So what they do is they allow their friends to front run them. So then that way their friends make a whole bunch of money first. And so Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and Bank of America, they'll buy the bonds first and then sell them for more money to the Federal Reserve. And it's like, and even that in and of itself is, you know, basically a secret bailout of the banks, and my daughter's telling me, shh, because she's on her iPad playing some Kidtopia learning game. But,
well, no, I remember when they were doing all of this, it was Cayman Islands of somebody of another shell company of the blah, 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 and they had the actual initial auction for the 10-year treasury or the 30-year or whatever, and nobody bought them, and then they were gone the next day. You know, and I'm going, that smells like Fed to me. Nope, nope, nope. That they're not. But of course, you know they're full of crap.
It was like Belgium that bought it or some crap like that too, supposedly.
Okay, well, Jay wants to inject. Go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Me or Jay?
Okay, well, you know, if you're done. All right, Jay, go.
Yeah. So, it's early here, so yeah.
So you're talking about like how Hertz rental car gets like bought up essentially by, you know, money just created out of nothing, you know, instantly. So, like, what I'm dealing with is, like, this guy that had 4,000 hogs that he had to gas. And they're not his hogs. You know, this Pennsylvania hog farmer, he raised them for Tyson. So how do we figure out if Tyson and Purdue and all these major, like, packers, you know, JBS, that are, you know, having to kill cows and hogs and chickens and whatnot, how do we figure out if there's, a money line coming from the printing press to those guys? Or I shouldn't say how, because you may know how, but is that something you could look at? Is that something that could be done? Because, you know, in the stock market, there's like this, you know, you understand the catastrophic things that happen when all this craziness happens. But in the actual livestock market, the meat market, well, they just euthanize 2 million chickens or they euthanize 4,000 hogs at one farm. And that's just one guy. So I don't even know how many hogs get euthanized. I've heard all kinds of different numbers. So basically they destroy meat. And they just pay everybody with fiat money when they destroy the meat, either where it's through insurance or, but, you know, everybody's getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, if you actually, I just woke up too, but if you go to the Drudge Report, like the very top middle link says, secrets, administration won't say who got $511 billion in taxpayer-backed buyers bailouts. And so they're not even letting people know where this money went.
Oh, hell, like they know. It was just, yeah. You know, they didn't know. That was the whole point. They didn't want to know. Pelosi's like, go pay off our buddies. That's who.
And one of the biggest financial advisory firms there are. So if you take a look at, like, influential financial advisors, at least from, like, a blocking standpoint, Ritz-Holtz Wealth Management, I believe, it holds the number one spot. And they even tapped out bailout funds as part of this. And so did this other firm, like Creative Financial Planning, which is Tony Robbins, his outlet. So you got these multi-billion dollar firms getting all this stuff. You also have I forgot where I was going. It's still early here.
All right, I want to do this Hertz thing so people understand what's going on. Donna, put this up.
Oh, that's what we've only gotten through half of the story of Hertz, because the other half of the story is that now that Hertz is in bankruptcy and you got all these traders on Robinhood, which is like, I've never been on there, but I guess it's like an app that makes it super easy. And a lot of like kids are on this app. And now there's stories of kids who are delaying, who aren't playing their Fortnite video game during the day because now there's like 10-year-olds day trading these bankrupt companies. And so you took a bankrupt Hertz, the stock absolutely, you know, went through the roof in bankruptcy because of all these kids on Robinhood speculating on this. And now Hertz, which is in bankruptcy, is trying to offer $1 billion worth of common stock to sell to all these idiot retail investors. People are dubbing this an initial bankruptcy offering. And so they're going to try to get themselves out of bankruptcy by issuing stock to the sheeple, when just literally like 3 weeks ago, I think was the largest ever exodus of money from high net worth institutional investors going basically out of the market.
So you're saying the shoeshine boy and the video game player kids are buying stock? It's time to get out. Is that what you're saying? When we come back, the most absurd moment in the history of capital market.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Tim Pachote and Jay Noon. We're in the doom now. We got the bus being painted. He said Wednesday night. You know, pinky swear, couldn't get it Wednesday night, so we'll see. We got a bunch of stuff to do. And I tell you what I need now. I got some people we're interviewing and talking to, but I need a social media person. You know, Tim, you got social media people? You going to share? You got something worked out? What are you doing?
I mean, not yet. Not to what I wanted. I know we were talking about something, but you know, that guy has been hit or miss. So we'll see what's.
Yeah, no, I need. I'm willing to pay, but I mean, hey, hello, people, Free State Project. You know, you somebody social guy. No, I don't mean. Well, I know how to tweet. No, I need some social media. Got their crap together. You know, so it's a full time job. Yeah, I need, you know, Donna's like, not me. So, you know, and so that we need that position. It's a paying gig. So we'll keep working on it. I'm sure we'll come up with at least get the word out really good at Porkfest, Workfest. So we'll see what's up. Now, you know, Tim was saying on there, and he goes, the market's so bad, it hurts. I go, oh, that's good. And then Jay comes up with, you know, got hurts pain frequency, and we got, I mean, this thing, Hertz is full of memes, man. I just feel this coming. There's going to be a bunch.
They're up 50% right now on the day.
What the hell? This is bankrupt, right? This is Hertz. Their car rentals not being done. They're liquidating stock. They're, you know, kind of going into bankruptcy, and the stock goes up. So I need to know about this Robin Hood thing. What the hell are you talking about? There's an app that somebody can just go in and trade stocks. So you got video game and 10-year-olds making stock trades. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I've never been on there, but apparently it's a very easy platform where you can just go on, sort of like a Coinbase. Hey, somewhere I'm on the phone. Where you can go on and it's like a marble just fly at me. Like, where'd that come from? But here's Summer.
Hi, Summer.
But anyways, this is app that makes it, I guess, really easy to go buy stock, and you've got all these kids who've, you know, never been through, you know, a 2008 or really been through anything before, who think that, you know, everything is so easy and everyone's just chasing these momentum plays and nobody cares about valuations, and all anybody cares about is, you know, is the Fed going to print more money or not? And so you have Hertz, which, you know, at one point was trading for like $20, you know, a few months ago, got down to 40 cents. And then they were going bankrupt and went bankrupt. And as they're going bankrupt, you had all these kids who are now and retail investors, the sheeple, piling into the stock. And, you know, if you want to take some of your money and use it to speculate and gamble, and you can do that, then fine, you know, more power to you. But, you know, I'm sure there's people who are putting in, you know, way too much money, you know, into these. Which, you know, pretty
well,
much
what's Hertz stock at now?
$3. So it's up $1 today. So it was up 54 cents. So it went from 40 cents. Which, I mean, usually.
So this is penny stock stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so now what they're saying is, oh, we want to sell $1 billion worth of stock to the same sheeple.
Are they still on the exchange? Are they in the Dow or what?
I mean, they're not in the Dow. The Dow is only like 30.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, they get listed, they get unlisted. See, that was one thing that kind of surprised me. The Dow Jones Industrial, which don't mean nothing, is only 30 companies. And by the time I started paying attention, when I started doing radio in the mid-2000s, all of a sudden I found out that in the last decade, there's only a few of the original 30 from the time that I've looked. You know, it just keeps changing. So the Dow number don't mean squat. It's different companies at different times with different inflations. Why are we even looking at it? Who gives a crap?
And the Dow is actually, in terms of how it's measured, Summer, Daddy's on the phone. So it's actually a lot different how they measure the Dow versus how they even measure like the S&P 500. And the S&P 500, how they measure that is much basically a lot smarter. And so the Dow, they do something called, I think it's a price-weighted average, whereas the S&P is a market-weighted average. So if you have a stock that's, let's say, trading at $5, which, you know, probably wouldn't be in the Dow, but let's say it was trading at $5 and it goes up to $10. That's a, you know, they've doubled their stock price. So in the S&P 500, it would reflect that stock went up, you know, doubled. Whereas in the Dow, it would only reflect it went up 5 points. And so it skews it to these stocks that have higher. Now if they split or do something like that, there's certain ways that they, you know, track that stuff as well. But yeah, it's just sort of like that's what it, you know, what people got accustomed to hearing, and that's what people got accustomed to, you know, hear, you know, reading in the papers back in 1890, and so it's just become a thing, and because it's a thing, there's a lot of psychology that derives off of that. And now people play off of that. But yeah, it's even stupid and so many different levels. Like you just mentioned, it's all different companies basically. There's pretty much, it's a Dow Jones industrial average. There's pretty much no industrial stocks even in there. It's all, you know, financial services firms and, you know, different money changers and things like that. Girls, I moved down here to be away from you guys.
I know. Tim's walking around the house trying to get away from the kids yelling at him.
they keep like running down here and telling me to be quiet, and now I'm going upstairs. It's the first house upstairs.
Okay. That's all right. It's a family show. We got Cypress. We got, you know, Summer. And now, I'm sorry,
James
Brittany.
What's
your other daughter's name, Brittany?
Brielle.
So this is, you know, what's interesting about having young children and grandkids and kids is that all this stuff buzzing around them, they don't have a clue. They don't care. They know. I remember there was like turmoils, because when I was a kid, when I was young, was during all the civil rights movement. You know, what was all around me was the civil rights stuff. And now it's back. You know, but this time it's way more politicized and manufactured. And it's not where before it was everybody, Martin Luther King, wore their best Sunday go-to-meeting clothes, and they would march peacefully. And then, of course, they'd come out with the fire hoses and the dogs and all this kind of. And now it's not as sympathetic, but it is pandered to so much. And then you have the economics that I've gone through several phases of this, and it's just gotten to where it's easier to just say or promote something on some media channel, or it's a number that they want to, you know, cite, and it's so superficial. It doesn't really mean the same or anything now. It's manufactured. It's like they want to get the band back together. You know, they're just making it up as they go along. So what's real? You know, what is really going? I mean, we got enormous debt. We got the world saying the dollar sucks and we're going to abandon. What's real, Tim? What do we should be really be looking at?
It seems like the only thing people care about these days is, what the Fed's, how much money the Fed's going to print. You've got guys like, Mohammed El Arian, who is the former. Well, we got two of the biggest bond fund people in the world basically talking about how bad bonds are. So Jeffrey Gundelach of Double Line Investments is, he's known as the bond king. The former bond king was Bill Gross, and his partner was Mohammed El Arian over at PIMCO, which now is, now he runs Allianz, which owns PIMCO. So these are two of the, and both of them, you know, are echoing things like Gundelach saying basically buy gold. And here he is, like the most like renowned bond fund manager there is in the world. And then you've got Al Arian, who's saying, listen, the only reason people are getting into the market is because they know the Fed's going to print money. But it's a very dangerous game, buying things solely off the fact that you think you're going to get bailed out.
Yeah, we'll be back in just a second. We're going into break with Tim Pachote, the LibertyAdvisor.com. You know what this reminds me of? Greece. This was, MF Global or something, where Salenti got nailed. They were counting on the bailout.
Freedom's the answer.
I'm guessing we're
What's
not back
the question?
Yet.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back with Tim Pachote, the LibertyAdvisor.com. Yes, one thing we need to somehow do to where you can hear the rejoint. You know, that's another thing on the list, you know, for all the stuff that we're doing. The we're talking about the economy and so on. And I remember when this happened, we had Gerald Celente on right when after this happened. We have him on a regular basis. Time to get him on again. But everything that he's predicted, we predict is happening. So it's not like what we're going to do, predict what's happening. I mean, so future trends is what he does. And Celente had purchased a bunch of gold on the futures market, and he got a good deal. So he, you know, and of course it has big, giant, long contracts of online, if I totally agreed. And he buys it, and then all of a sudden, when the contract comes due, they want you to, you buy another one, or you take your profits in cash, or you do it. No, I want to exercise the contract. I want the gold. I got a good deal on it. It's going to go out. Give me my gold. Well, what happened was it goes into the contract. I think it was MF Global, right? It was, you know, so it goes into MF Global, and all of a sudden it was gone. Well, this is Jamie Dimon, I think, right? So Jamie Dimon.
No, it's John Corzine.
Oh, John Corzine. Okay. So John Corzine. Yeah.
Former Goldman Sachs CEO and I believe a former senator out of New Jersey and I think a former governor of New Jersey, I believe.
Wow. Triple scumbag. Okay. So triple scumbag Corzine, MF Global, they take the money and then they invested it into Greece bonds. Now, the idea was is that the European Union, the European Central Bank, was going to bail out Greece or something. But they had, which I think they eventually did one way or another. But, you know, they had to do it by a certain time, you know, or they lost all of their marbles. Well, they did. And all of a sudden, Salente didn't have anything to do with that. He just invested, you know, MF Global to buy futures on gold. And then all of a sudden, his money went away.
He wasn't even. He was in another company that then got bought out by MF Global, and he didn't even realize it was like MF Global when he was in it because it was some other old school company that got bought out.
Oh, really? It's even double worse. All right. Yeah. So, but this is how the financial system worked. And of course, Corzine, being senator, governor, Goldman Sachs.com scumbag, you know what they did is in there. And I called Charles Goyette because he's all Mr. Money guy, and I said, "What just happened? I don't even understand what happened." And he goes, "Ernie, you need to learn
rehypothecation."
Right. He goes, "You need to learn a new word." I go, "What word's that?" "Rehypothecation." Okay. And I'm going, "What the hell is that?" He goes, "Look it up." So I went and looked it up. And what it is MF Global, when you put money with them, or they buy a company that had a bunch of money and they knew they were going to do this, they have the ability to use your deposits as collateral on their investments. Now, that was illegal in the U.S., or still is, or is going to be, or something, but it wasn't.
Well, now your deposits at the bank now are now the collateral of the bank.
Yeah, no, because this was in the United Kingdom, it was legal to do this. So they did it. And now, after they screwed everybody, ooh, that's a good way to rip off people. Let's make it legal in America again, or something. So this is, so Salente is just pissed. I go, "Hey, man, did you totally agree to your iTunes contract? You know, I totally agree. You know, a human I sent iPad. I mean, you know, this is," and all the little fine print was that, yep, he totally agreed to this or agreed to somebody buying it to be able to do it. It's the biggest. So he was out, I don't know, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars at least. You know, so this is what's going on. And it was all gambled on Greece. Anybody else get nailed on that deal?
Yeah, a guy by the name of like Mark Medvedinsky or something like that, who happens to be the son-in-law of Hillary Clinton, married to Chelsea Clinton. And I think his firm, it was like, this is all off memory right now, it's like Eagle Asset Management or something like that. And I believe they were down like 95% of all their client assets. So, you know, shedding a tear for the Clinton family over here. No, just kidding.
I'm sure they came out okay. You know,
I mean, if we're talking about people getting wiped out, I mean, no better people to happen to than the, you know, someone related to the Clintons and former CEO of Goldman Sachs. But, you know, but the thing is, I mean, he never had to take a perp walk. Talking about John Corzine for this, never got in any trouble, never basically faced any.
I doubt he had to sell his assets to cover his losses.
And now he's probably looking at what's going on. He's like, "Oh." And now he's like, "Oh, crap, look at this." Like, if this would have happened, you know, years ago, he would have gotten bailed out. And so if you had bought Hertz bonds a year or two ago speculating on it, oh, you got paid out at 100 cents on the dollar because the Federal Reserve came in and bought the bonds. And so, I mean, it's just
crazy. Well, aren't they doing that now? They're buying some ETFs. Yeah. What the hell is that about? Electronic
traded
funds.
Exchange traded funds.
Whatever it is. Okay, so exchange traded funds is not a real asset. It's kind of like a derivative. It's based on the value of something. It's not even really the asset, is it?
Well, it can be a derivative or it can be an asset that's made up of other assets. But effectively what it is, long story short for the listeners, is they come in many different flavors. So you might have one that's all the technology stocks. You might have one that's all the country Japan. Or you might have one that's all the large cap stocks. Or one that's all the mid cap stocks. So instead of going in and buying up, you know, individual stocks and trying to pick out which ones you think are best, you just buy the entire basket of whatever basket it is. And some of them do it based off the average. So if, you know, if Apple's 2% of the S&P, then they'll put 2% of it into their large cap stock. Other ones, there's certain metrics that they use. But effectively, you are indiscriminately just going out there and buying up everything. So if you are an investment grade bond fund, most of the time what you're doing is if XYZ company is 0.01% of the corporate bond market, then you have to have 0.01% in your exchange traded fund. Now, this was also in my Anarcho-Poco talk from this year where I said, listen, a big catalyst for what's going to happen during this next Black Swan event that's eventually coming, which I didn't realize it was coming like 10 days later, was that the corporate bonds right now, if you are a triple, you know, A, or it goes all the way down to triple B is investment grade bonds. So triple A, double A, triple B, those are all investment grade bonds. Now, if you go from triple B down to double B, now you're not investment grade. Now you're in now what they call high yield, which is euphemism for junk. And so if you are junk bond, you cannot be in a investment grade bond fund. So then that will then create forced selling, which will then create more forced selling, which will then create an avalanche and have the entire thing implode, because historically about 20 to 40% of the triple B bonds end up going into junk status. Half of the investment grade bonds are triple B. And this literally word for word what I was talking about in February in the presentation, slides and graphs and showing all this shit. Oh, sorry, what's going on. And then the Fed came out and started buying up the junk bond funds. And then they were then using the company BlackRock, which, you know, is one of the, or is the largest asset manager in the world. I think they're managing like $6.5 trillion, which at one
Whoa.
Point, I'm not sure what it is now.
Whoa. $6.5 trillion?
So they manage like all the government pensions and like all the, they are like
that tells me everything.
They're called BlackRock. I mean, they're very Illuminati symbolism in that name too. I mean, at least it's not called like Black Cube. But there's another investment firm called Black Cube, but and an Israeli private intelligence firm that I think Harvey Weinstein hired called Black Cube to then intimidate the women that were testifying against him. But it's crazy. I'm like, just woke up and I'm like, I'm not pulling out all this crap.
So BlackRock, $6 trillion. Damn. And it's all the pensions and everything. So then they go into
they manage money for like the U.S. government pension is run through BlackRock. And now BlackRock has a high yield fund, and they get to sell their high yield junk bond fund to the Federal Reserve and then get a commission for being the broker for offloading their bullshit to the Federal Reserve. I mean, this
at a dollar for dollar.
Yeah, and actually it's probably stuff that they bought even lower. It rose in value as
the bond. Oh, my God.
This is a bank robbery of just epic proportions. And Larry Fink, is the CEO of it, is one of the guys who basically pioneers in these collateralized loan obligations. And I'm not sure if credit defaults, but okay. All right, you want some milk, baby? Okay, yeah. So I'm going to go downstairs now. Now my kids are up here and want me to get them milk. But yeah, it is so outrageous what has been allowed to go on. And then I was on someone else's podcast, a very mainline, not anarchist type podcast. And then there was two other Forbes writers there. And I just lit these women up like you wouldn't believe.
We're going into break. Got to take care of some kid milk. And we'll be right back with Tim Pachote, Liberty Advisor.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Tim Pachote, the LibertyAdvisor.com. You know, one thing we should talk about is I got in on the tail end because Tim finagled appearance, whatever it was. It was a influencer, talk show host, big dozens of – was it just amongst themselves, or did they have audiences tuning in also?
I think a few people were streaming it out. I think like Jason Burmes may have been streaming it out. And a lot of people posted it after the fact on channels. So I posted it on my Liberty Advisor YouTube page and on my podcast feed. And now I have my YouTube page that's going to be mirrored with Library TV. So, you know, after hearing Jeremy Kaufman on your show for 4 years, I decided to finally take the plunge and go on Library TV because I was so pissed off with BitChute and how I wasn't pissed off. I just got sick of all their BS and just stopped uploading there because, you know, I don't have time to screw around with, you know, 8 days to upload a video or, you know, have the.
Well, you know, that's one thing. Well, tell the people what this group was real quick. And that's one thing I asked them at the end. I go, any of you guys, what are you guys loading up to? And it's all YouTube stuff, Facebook, all this kind of crap. I go, whoa. I mean, anything else? And they go, well, bitch, shoot this. I go, well, is anybody else able to? I got 3 hours a day I got to do. That takes freaking forever. You know, it's like the next day by the time it gets up.
Oh, this is a crowd that was, you know, living high on, you know, YouTube and doing all the mainline stuff. And, you know, now they're starting to see themselves getting kicked off of all these platforms. And as they're not kicked off, getting all their income taken away. And then if not that, then they're getting hit with all these copyright stuff or this or that or all this BS. And then for guys like Josh, I mean, even though now he's not really making any money.
Josh Segerson, World Alternative Media.
Yeah, thank you for that. And so even guys like him now, his main thing and my main thing for me is, you know, it's just trying to reach the people. And so we can't even reach the people. My daughter listening and all this stuff. So we can't even reach the people now because, you know, some algorithm has said that we're unwanted. So actually what we're called – I mean, I didn't make this up, but that podcast, we're calling this the and I don't even like using this word union, but they call it the Union of the Unwanted. So they call it the Union of the Unwanted podcast, where, I don't know, there's probably like 28 different, you know, somewhat influential. I mean, I'm, you know, probably one of the – I'm probably like the least well-known person that was
Well, starting
there,
rattling so, off I mean, some of the guys that were on.
I mean, you had Ben Swan, James Corbett. Luke Radowski, Josh Segerson, Jason Burmis, Sam Tripoli of the Tinfoil Hat podcast, which, you know, and then some of Sam's other friends who are more like in the truth, conspiracy realm. There's some other people who are big time people who I wasn't even aware of, but there's, you know, oh, this person's got, you know, 200,000 YouTube, Twitter, Facebook subscribers, and
well,
people I need to
hear, you know, some of them contacted me after I did my spiel. Donna said we'll be starting to do them next week because we got the bus in being painted, so I'm not going to have the studio back to me until next Thursday. But you know, you go from the big studio into the little studio, and now I'm at a card table at Jay's Dome. And this Comrex thing, I can put it on my hip and walk out with a Wi-Fi.
I've got like a full studio upstairs, and I'm on my cell phone right now. So yeah,
right, you know, so we got skills. You know, the thing is that these were a lot of guys that a year ago, a year and a half ago, we had been warning this was going to happen. And while Corbett was on there, of course, he was talking about, you know, his experience with IPFS, and, you know, and I came up and you were talking to him. So it's like, hey, well, let's get Ernie on. And we were eating dinner.
Well, nobody actually said that. I brought you up, and then I then just gave you an invite without asking anybody. So.
Ah, there you go. Thank you. Yeah. Well, they were talking about IPFS. Well, of course, you know, we need to talk to the guy doing it. So when I went on and Jay was there, we were talking about the solution. You know, Jay is like feeding the Free State Project. He's out getting, you know, cows and pigs and slaughterhouse building and doing and kind of mailing, they're taking care of business. And these guys were still, you could tell, they were totally they were infatuated by the IPFS thing that even existed, and they were looking it up. Wow, this is cool. Where does this come from? And they had not even looked at alternatives to the main platforms. That's what surprised me. I go, what did you think was going to happen?
And then I go, let's just build a website. We all get on the same website. And then, oh, do we use, you know, Microsoft Cloud, or do we use Amazon Cloud? I'm like, they're going to – I'm like, if you get, like, all the biggest people and me somehow, like, do you think that they're not going to go and target that website first? Like remember what happened with Gab where
yep.
People are like, oh, well, just, you know, like Facebook, just build your own. And you build your own, and then Microsoft Azure Cloud is like, oh, well – you guys had, you know,
I asked the guys, I said, which one are you guys, how do you use, what are you putting? He goes, oh, and only one guy had any kind of solution, but it was, he goes, well, I put my files up on Dropbox for my subscribers to download. Dropbox, that's your solution? You know, you guys are killing me. And I know Corbett has, you know, that's why I'm so supportive of Corbett. And because he understood this was coming. Of course it was coming. So he stores his stuff as MP4 on his site. Now, he'll use these other platforms just because as long as they'll let him. But it was obvious what was coming. And now, Corbett, we had him on Monday or Tuesday, and he said that the recommendations from YouTube are starting to recommend him in the sidebars again, you know, his different videos. Now, not to him, but, you know, some of the his subscribers and so on. I don't trust him. I don't trust any of these platforms. I don't trust any. And if we're not looking for alternatives, these guys are just going to be, you know, has-beens and roadkill. And I could feel it from them. And I was very excited. I go, look, I'm glad I got to talk to all you guys. I'm glad you got exposed to this. Thank you, Tim, for, you know, putting me up and come on and do it. And they were appreciative. They were at the solution stage. But I'm going, the fact that it never occurred to them to even look, I'm going, they're just going to be roadkill. Is any of them making the, I mean, I guess it was James was the hopefully the most inspirational of them.
I think a lot of people were, I think James is sort of like a godfather of that group where a lot of people got inspired to do things because of work that James has put out there. And so when James came up and started saying, talking about IPFS at just a super high level, you know, that gave it a lot of weight. And then I brought you up as sort of the godfather of talking about IPFS. And so that way, you know, since all those guys really respected James, and then I kind of gave the lead in that you know, have been interviewing James, you know, pretty much every week for years and years and years, and that you've got the only copy of Plandemic that, you know, to our knowledge hasn't been taken down because it's on IPFS. Then, you know, I think that, I mean, everybody literally, like after 2 minutes that they were talking, they were like, basically got the axe of like, hey, you need to basically kind of zip it up. But, you know, you went on like a 20-minute monologue at one point and didn't get stopped. So apparently they liked what you had to say. And
well, nobody told me there was a 2-minute limit. That was a big mistake right there. But it was towards the end, and they were kind of wanting the solution anyway.
Yeah, at the end, so.
Yeah, so it worked out. And I apologize. I go, hey, man, Tim didn't tell me.
A lot of people have not actually thought through all these. I mean, you're so far advanced in thinking through these other next steps that, you know, like why, you know, it's you know, we could already kind of skip to the end of, you know, all these other solutions are not going to work. And James, it was like, listen, I'm not going to, you know, centralize all my stuff on one website. I'm not going to do this. Or, I mean, it was, you know, good stuff that he was saying. But, you know, it's good that now that there's people who are out there thinking of this now. I mean, it's better late than never. But, yeah, I mean, eventually they're just going to make sure that we can't get our message out there at all.
Yeah. And, no, it has to be something like this. And I made that emphasize that. I go, if they can, they will. And everything that you're talking about, they can. It may delay it a week or two or month or year, but they can. It has to be where they can't. And I'm very interested in Starlink because I need to know if Elon Musk is going to have a landing pad on Mars for Space Force and whether he's going to regulate the ones and zeros on his internet. I mean, you know, I
love what you were saying about Elon. You're like, hey, he's friends with all these tech billionaires, and what's he trying to do? He's trying to get off this planet to go to Mars, and he's also, you know, creating like an end of the world cyber truck that's like the ultimate like prepper vehicle. So that's what he's invested in. But I mean, they don't want to have guys like me and you out there talking about what the game, exposing the game plan, which is to have a digital dollar. The digital dollar is going to be tied into some sort of contact tracing social credit score, and then they're going to be like, oh, well, you didn't get your vaccine, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're not going to get your $2,000 a month until you can prove that you got the vaccine, you know, your mark in order to be able to travel, which, I mean, 5 years ago, that would not to this audience wouldn't have sounded that crazy, but now it's like literally in bills talking about, you know, having this FederalReserve.gov dollar that's, you know, going to be used for this, you know, maybe potentially for a whole year after coronavirus. I mean, Kamala Harris is actually floating a bill to pay people $10,000 a month for up to. So what they'll do,
yeah,
is.
We're at the end. This is one thing that I wanted to make sure they understood. They're going to be doing and cutting down all this stuff if you don't have another way of getting.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Beard here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Henniker, New Hampshire. I got to get out of the habit of saying Phoenix. You know, we're in Henniker, New Hampshire, and it's a moving the love bus. It'll be a going. We're going to be in New Hampshire probably for at least another 3-4 weeks. And there's kind of spokes. It's kind of a hub for a little bit, but we're going to be spoken out to New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania a little bit and this and that and doing different things and events and so on. But there's a lot of people we need to talk to here. You know, here is where, you know, here. They're got it taken care of here. So, you know, here's where we're going to be talking about for, you know, what you should be doing there is what they're doing here. You know, especially at, you know, the Domes, D-H-O-M-E-S, the Domes, the double domes, the boobies. You know, that's how the UPS guys know the boobies over there. So they, we have Jay Noon's got a lot of contact. Everybody knows Jay. You know, Jay fixes everybody's cars and their diesels and their buses and their trailers and their horses and their, you know, so, and he's got a farm going on here. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. This is such a good example. Now, yesterday we had Carla Garrick on talking about we're going to go over home for dinner tonight and what's up. I've known Carla for a long time, got over a decade or so. And we talk, have, you know, the big high level of what's up, you know, conversations, sit at the VIP lounge, sitting there and how much we can drink. And even if I don't get a VIP, she goes and gets me drinks anyway. So, you know, we hang out and, you know, get caught up. Now, President Emeritus at the Free State Project is Rachel Goldsmith that we're going to be talking to here. And I'm looking, yeah, say hello. Let's make sure which mic you're on. Say hello.
Hello.
Okay, do it again.
Hello.
No, that's this one.
Okay.
Turn that down. All right. So the I'm looking at her, I guess, her resume, you know, the bio here. But let's see. You're not that old. You can't be more than 30. 29.
That's very complimentary of you. No, I'll be 32 this year. And
yeah, 29 was a good guess. Better. I said 33, I would have got shot.
I still get ID'd when I buy cigarettes. So
I know Donna, man. She wants to get ID'd.
Drives me crazy.
Oh, she likes it. At 50 something, ID'd me. Can I tell my husband? Okay.
I mean, first of all, like, am I lying? Are you suggesting that I'm lying when I say how old I am? Because I feel like it's just a miscommunication. And second of all, I don't need a government ID in order to make a purchase.
See, Rachel's one of them.
Drives me nuts.
There
man.
You go. There you go. that's why she's in New Hampshire. Okay. Well, she's in 06 to 11, she went to State University of New York at Binghamton. And activities and societies, and philosophy club, and food cooperative. So that's like, sounds like, smells like Free State to me, you know? So the New Hampshire, then she went to Temple University, you know, Fox School of Business and Management. And then we got, you know, campaigns this, and she medical, you know, director and marketing development and whatever. And I see, and this is what comes to me, director of operations. It's always the operations. You put operations on a resume, I'm saying, that means boss. That means somebody didn't direct and delegate and kind of making it go work.
Getting it done. That's what
and
I like.
When you say director of operations, executive director, you kind of, you win.
Yeah.
All right?
No, so, I started my like Liberty journey at Binghamton and the Philosophy Club and the Food Co-op. And I kind of came at it from a perspective of like the government was overreaching in a lot of ways and taking our tax dollars and putting them into the military and then going off to fight wars for oil. And then simultaneously, I was saying, you know, people, this drug war thing is a load of crap. And I don't know, what level of swearing am I allowed to do on this?
I think that's about it.
All right.
You know, it doesn't matter. I had audience there. You know, I have Ian always on my butt. No, are you? You want to be family-friendly category on
right.
LRN? We got to keep family-friendly.
Family-friendly category.
And then I got an audience member. He goes, he's in a farm in Missouri, I think, somewhere. And he goes, well, now all my little kids listening know about blowjobs from the Onion thing. You know, I guess it's not that. So I go, Ian, are we family-friendly or not? I mean, come on. You know, so we got to work that out.
So for me, it was kind of like the government wasn't representing me as a participant. And so I really came at the anarchy perspective from that direction. I had, you know, gone to government schools my whole life and grown up believing in the social contract. And, you know, when I turned 18, I signed up to vote and I started paying taxes and I was, you know, going to be someone who contributed to a government and expected the government to then reflect me as a as an individual. And so,
you're at this level of thought then?
Back in college, man. That's what
okay. But what started that? Why? What book
Club
did you read?
For.
What uncle was it? What grandma told you this?
I studied.
What, did you get it on Sesame Street? You didn't get it from PBS. You know what I mean? So where did you get this understanding?
I smoked a lot of weed.
You know, I tell you what, I understand. You know, this is one I want to inject this. And
I tripped
understand.
A couple of times, and I just started thinking about stuff.
I want to see if this rings true with you. This is a lot of people that, because I didn't smoke a lot of marijuana until probably 94. I guess I was, how old was I? I was probably in my early 30s. I mean, I had smoked marijuana, you know, whatever, but I got burned really bad. And, you know, it was a gasoline thing and whatever. So when I got burned, it was the pain and, you know, just the changing the bandages or, you know, coping with marijuana. I go, man, this really works when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, you know, that's my medicine.
Yeah.
So, but then I realized something. And at the same time, right before that, there was a online, it was a cassette, you know, business management thing or something. And I would listen to these. I had some clients that had them, and when they got done, they just give them to me, or I'd listen to them when I was working and so on. And I remember they had this one thing. Indecision is the worst decision for a reason. You know, it doesn't matter if you make a bad decision. Mm. It changes your perspective, so you see the problem differently. Then you may be able to make the right decision. Mm. So indecision, you're sitting there banging your head on the wall, you know, over and over and over. You got to make a decision so that you can get at least, you might get lucky and, you know, do it right, but at least you get a different perspective. And the example they use, they go, you're standing there staring at a telephone pole. Then you take a little bit of a step to the left or right. There's a crap load of telephone poles.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't see all the other telephone poles.
Right.
So then when I started, I would watch the evening news. And you ever watch the evening news on weed? Okay. So you sit there and watch and you're going, then I realized you would change it to ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS. It was the same five stories in the same order.
Yeah.
Who the hell does this TV programming?
Yeah.
So I'm looking, I'm going, the marijuana is what gave me that different perspective to see that.
Yeah, it really.
If I hadn't have done it, I wouldn't have saw it.
For me, what happens is it kind of takes me away from, like, it gives me a bit of perspective, exactly like you're saying. And actually, so before I went to college, I spent 6 months in Israel on a, like, work-study thing. And so it was at a time that there was, you know, escalating violence and suicide bombers on buses and things like this. And so I was listening to the radio. I don't remember exactly the date or whatever. It was, you know, 2006. And they had a very, like, calm, serious-voiced man telling us about the bombings and about, you know, very, like, just conveying that, like, everything is okay, please don't freak out, et cetera, et cetera. And then immediately after, they had this guy with a big voice talking about sports, and it just clicked in my head, like, they are controlling us through the media.
You know, once you get to that realization, you don't see it the same anymore.
You don't.
I wonder what we got to do. I don't know, maybe everybody got to smoke weed, you know, and I, maybe that's why they didn't want it. They didn't want this enlightenment. And now they do. Don't. I don't know.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Rachel Goldsmith here at the Domes, the Dragonfly Domes. They have a lot of dragonflies. You know what I found out? Dragonflies eat mosquitoes. I love dragonflies.
They're great.
Dragonfly, 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 go get them mosquitoes because damn it, you know. Mosquitoes haven't been too bad, but some years it is. I mean, I remember one time, God, it was years ago at Pork Fest, man, they were just eating up little babies. It was amazing.
Well, that's what I was going to say actually earlier is of all the places that you're going to be traveling to and this tour that you're taking, New Hampshire has got to be the most beautiful. That's for sure.
It is very nice. I've been up here, maybe 20 times, you know.
Just gorgeous all and, year long.
Well, I was here during the Levolution in the winter of 07, 08, We had a cabin up on a lake that we came right before Christmas, and then we came right after New Year's, and we were doing all, you know, Ron Paul stuff. And it was a world record freaking snowfall of 137 inches of, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
And it, what was amazing to me is, one, it was nice, and that the people are self-sufficient in the point that by 8 o'clock in the morning, everything's plowed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they do their own plowing. They go, I ain't waiting on the man. I got a plow, man. Yeah. I ain't going nowhere.
Even before this pandemic, when all of the shelves were being, you know, when all the toilet paper and the bread and the milk, all these things, like, that doesn't happen in New Hampshire because people don't freak out about weather-related emergencies. Like, they have everything prepared.
Yeah, we got nor'easters all the time.
That's,
I mean, what are you
gonna do? It's every weekend, you know? We know what to do about it. We know how to handle it.
It's been, and you came from New York?
I did. I came from upstate New York. It's like the same exact latitude and
so it wasn't a lot
similar
different.
Amount of rainfall and everything. Yeah, very similar.
So this is, you know, not, but I've always been, I have been here during the winter, but I haven't been here during the winter, you know, a long time. But I was in Maine and here for probably over a month working on the bus. So it's ice and snow and mud and cold. And then by the time we left and went to Phoenix, it's 100 degrees. You know, I didn't get this nice like this.
Then
you know,
between.
So I'm back here. I'm like, oh, my God, thank you. And that's what we're doing on the tour is chasing like 75, 76 to nighttime degree sleeping weather.
Yeah, that's,
you know, I'm doing that winter visitor. I ain't getting down to Arizona and Florida and stuff until
to me,
you know,
there's
October.
Like no such thing as bad weather, right? There's just badly prepared people. So for New Hampshire winters, like, as long as you have a solid pair of boots, gloves, and a jacket, like, you're not going to be out of shape.
You know, I bought these boots right here when I came up last. That was February.
Yeah, those look good.
I didn't bring anything, and I went to the general store, one of these close by here. I go, all right, Jay, where do I go? I get the coveralls, I get the insulated this, I get the that. I spent like $500 on I am not, homie ain't being cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd see my eyeballs and that was it, man.
I hate being cold.
Oh, God, it sucks. So I this big jacket, I go, I'm good.
Yep.
You know, I that's how Jay does all this stuff because he's, you know, properly attired. When I put it up on the counter and they go, where are you going? You know, it's like February. Hell, winter's over now, you know.
Yeah, right?
Where are you? I go, here. I'm from Phoenix, man. What the hell are you talking about? So the preparation here, when you had the run on food and all that kind of stuff, you know, the people here are pretty much set for a while.
Yeah.
But not forever.
I have a decent bubble, right, of like most of my contacts in New Hampshire are free staters. And most free staters that I know are more likely to be prepared than the rest of the population, I would say, like civilians or muggles or whatever you want to call them. And
muggles.
Well, the right has Harry Potter now. Did you hear?
Was that them? Yeah, I saw something. I don't care.
I don't know. Anyway.
Changes every week.
I know. It's nuts. Like, who gives a shit? Anyway, so I would say 90% of the people that I was, you know, connected with have MREs in their basement or have, you know, cans stockpiled. Like, nobody was going to go hungry, even if they couldn't go to the store for 3 weeks because the government locked us down.
Yeah, but 3 months?
3 months might have been a little tight. Might have been a little tight.
You know, well, that's one thing. It was early on. You know, Jay, he's like, I know what to do. I got a livestock trailer, man. We need to go find who's giving away, you know, the livestock.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found, though, if he told you, they had, you know, it was a farmer's dilemma.
Okay.
You know, he had to, I got 4,000 hogs that I can't sell. I got to get rid of. Who wants them? They made a deal. He's on his way, ready to pull out the driveway. And the guy calls and says, I got a contract with Tyson. They say I have to euthanize him. I can't do it. 4,000 hogs go in a ditch.
That's awful.
Because the food price, because they don't want competition. They want food short, something.
Yeah.
I don't know. That needs to be, because I remember as a kid.
Driving up prices.
Yeah, my grandparents, they were talking about, and my parents, they were saying that farmers were being paid not to farm.
Yeah, that's true today, too.
Yeah. You know, I was going, who in the hell makes this stuff up? And they're doing it again.
Yeah.
This is all about food.
Soy and corn. They do that. And they've been doing that for the past, what, 60, 70 years? Something like that? I mean,
jacked up.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And Trump is not going to stop. You know, he says that he's low government, but he is pandering to farmers just like every president before him. And it's not going to stop. And we're wasting food in this country. Actually, that was one of the major things that brought me to anarchy is, like, you know, restaurants and Dunkin' Donuts or whatever would throw food away, lock the dumpster, instead of just feeding people. Like, they can't take on their own risks, right? It's a liability issue. These people who are starving are stuck out on the street.
Yeah, liability if they're starving.
Right, and they're Dunkin' Donuts or whoever it is weren't allowed to just give them the food that was going to get thrown away, because what if they got sick off of the food? I mean, this is the kind of government regulation that, to me, as a person who's altruistic and empathetic and cares about others, that's where the problem lies.
You know, this is one thing. I want to see if this rings with you. Over the past few years, when we started doing, after when Trump went down the escalator and he started the campaign, a friend of mine, he was a Ron Paul Republican guy in Arizona, Dr. Frank Tamburi, and he goes, now, Ernie sends me an email, don't be a hater, but I want to come on every week. We do the Trump report.
Okay.
And I'm like, bring it on, man. I can not vote for him as much as I can not vote for, I don't give a crap, you know, saying all this same stuff. He's already, his first day in office, he's freaking droning people. I mean, you know, next, he's dealing with the Fed. So blah, 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 blah. I don't care. How much worse it would have been. I go, I don't know. Can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? I mean, you know,
really?
Yeah, you know, the mindset.
Let's get
to
anarchy, man. Let's see that chaos start.
I think we're, we're getting a taste,
it's
know.
It's pretty close.
So I'm wondering what you think. Is Trump a side effect? Is it, are they going to allow it to be, they're going to do a mail-in voting? Is he going to be allowed to have another 4 years? Do they need him to have another 4 years to give credibility? Is it all just going to come crashing down? Is China going to take over the world? Is it, the they, them, those of the alien Alpha Centauri, we got an excuse to come together of your bank?
So, I mean, I'm no expert on history. Like, there are people who know a lot more about the world events than I do, for sure. But all the signs that I'm seeing show that we have such a two distinct cultures in America that are getting more and more tense every single day. And the fact that they're tearing down statues, the fact that they're rioting the streets and getting away with it. I mean, this is looking more and more to me like a cultural revolution. And this is
from what to what?
This is how civil wars begin, is what we're seeing.
Between what?
Between the Black Lives Matter socialists.
Which is what? It's so socialism.
I mean, if you look at the actual legislation that they're calling for on their website, a lot of it is socialism. A lot of it is paying people for not doing work. And it comes on top of the government locking down people and paying them to not do work because of COVID.
I know.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
From the studio of the Dooms, the Dragonfly Dooms. The it's refreshing talking to Rachel. You know, she's just, incredulity, am I saying incredulousness of, this is just stupid. that which is stupid does not last because it's stupid.
It would be great if the truth broke things that deserve to be broken, as the saying goes.
It does. I'm old enough to have seen that sooner or later it does. And what happens is it creates a parade and everybody gets behind, truth, and this is stupid. Then you get a politician who runs and jumps in front of it, Oh, this is what I wanted to ask you. It ring true or not? When we started doing the Trump report thing, Dr. Frank Tamburi made a big deal out of it was during the campaign. You had Hillary Clinton and Cruz and the Republican, and I was kind of outquitted and so on, who's got the smaller hands. And I'm going, this is just weird. These people are weird. He goes, they're sociopaths. He went on about the sociopath next door book and all this stuff. So then you have to look at what that means. You don't have the empathy when you were talking about your empathy for, humanity and saying, they're just evil guys. As I was doing activism since the late 80s, when I was young, I was your guy's age, late 20, 28, I started this stuff. And I go through the process. You look at the blue pages and the white pages in the front and what government agency, a permit if I want to get something, whatever, right? That mindset is how they program you. They screw you up right there. Then it was you meet with politicians, you run for office, I get standing, I file lawsuits, I have oral argument for the Ninth Circuit, I have like a bunch of, federal cases, state cases, three times Arizona Supreme Court. I just don't be in a butthead because I want them to say it. I just want them to, they're not going to rule in your favor, don't care. I just want them to say it, okay? What I found out is there was something wrong with these people. They're not right in the head. You talk to them because you're in their office. Or they'll sit there and admit how they're screwing people and clients paying them to do legislation. I'm going, do you even hear yourself? I need to take a bath. I need to get out. There's something wrong. Shiny badges attract sociopaths. They don't think like you. They are looking for the angle. They're looking for a way to take advantage. They're looking for a way to rip you off. And they feel justified in doing it because they told you they were going to do it. And you let them do it.
I got swept away on the Obama train way back when. You know, he promised things like shutting down Guantanamo Bay. He promised to get out of all these wars and do all these things. Like, I really thought he was a person of the people. And then, you know, he didn't, right? He continued to bomb people. In the first 60 days, I think he bombed Northern Africa probably 24 times. The number of people who died as a result of him being in office is equal to or greater than the number of people who Trump has killed. So, you know, I don't think the thing is that, like, if you're going to be pursuing a higher power, a higher office, you have to be sociopathic or narcissistic or think somehow that you're better or smarter than other people in order to make decisions on their behalf. And I just don't think that there's a person who can be rational and, you know, not and think that they can do that.
You know, that's one thing a lot of people, they go, well, don't you think that people should or did, you know, it doesn't matter what I think.
Right.
I don't care. As long as they're not bothering me and they're not in the way of my pursuit of happiness, peace. I don't care.
Well, that's the thing about – so New Hampshire has some of the best homeschooling laws in the country, and it's because the legislator here, the legislature, knows that they don't know better than parents on how to teach their kids.
Well, they all know that. They just don't care.
Well, recently I saw an article that some – senator essentially said, like, unless a parent has an advanced degree, they are not qualified to teach their children. Like, what is it about the public school education, K through 12, that means that you can't teach a child how to do basic math? That you somehow need to go to an additional school for 8 years or whatever the case may be in order to essentially babysit kids? You know right. what I'm saying? Like, it's an absolute absurdity, and it's just this power grab that is nonstop. People
okay,
who become politicians, that's all they can think of. They don't see any other person as competent or capable.
Well, Carrie McDonald, we just put it up yesterday. It's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix.
She's
Freedom
great.
With an S, freedomsphoenix.com.
She's been to Porkfest.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. I'd like to talk to her.
Corey DeAngelis is going to be at Porkfest this year. He's also a big homeschool advocate.
Well, what got my attention here from FEE, Foundation for Economic Education, is having a debate with some Harvard professor of who wants a presumptive ban on homeschooling.
So at Harvard.
She's from Harvard, yeah.
No, I think...
What do you mean they didn't want homeschooling at... Oh, they don't want
they're
Harvard
not gonna take,
students from homeschooling.
Right, they're not going to take homeschoolers anymore at Harvard, which is absurd.
Regardless of testing or...
Regardless of any merit whatsoever. How absurd is
so,
that?
Wait.
So, there
so
are,
that's what the issue is?
There are graduates from Harvard who were homeschooled, right? So there's a whole series of
they don't think right.
Kids who
no,
went...
Oh, they're too thinking for them. They don't do it right.
They ask the right questions is the problem.
Oh, so that's what the issue is.
Harvard, I think,
I
was going to hold...
I thought it was on homeschool, not Harvard taking homeschool.
I think Harvard was going to hold a conference
awesome.
Against homeschooling, and Carrie McDonald and Corey DeAngelis put a big to-do about it on Twitter, and essentially they canceled the conference. They canceled the anti-homeschooling conference, but I think they're still going to debate her.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's so, it's like, this
no,
is
they're
how.
Not. No, they're not.
They're not going to debate her?
Hell no. It was just like they had the Soho debate between Scott Horton and Bill Kristol, you know, from wherever the hell Bill Kristol's from. You know, they, yeah, you know, he's got CPAC. What was it? We needed a Pearl Harbor event to bring everybody together, blah, 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 blah. That was him,
Jesus.
Right? You know, Bill Kristol's always on Fox. He's, you know, part of the neocon.
I really try to ignore everybody just talking.
Yeah,
heads.
So it's a super big anti-war guy, Horton, versus big
right.
giant war guy going to do a Manhattan Soho debate, kind of whatever. So we put the ad up on Freedom's Phoenix, you know, have Horton on. I go, this is amazing. I go, this is so amazing, I guarantee you don't do it. So here comes COVID. If they had to have a COVID thing to make sure they didn't have that debate, that's what they had done. So I'm looking at this Harvard homeschool thing. I guarantee that ain't happening.
Yeah, right.
Then I'm going, no, it's not.
I mean, it's like they start them young, you know? This is institutionalization from day one.
That is amazing.
And I think it's so I want to be clear on the whole Black Lives Matter thing. Like, I think that there are injustices. I think that the police brutality and accountability is a major issue.
But not as a race thing, I think. For me, it may be. I mean, I'm sure there's some stats or whatever. But I feel just as threatened by the man as – I mean, I guess if you're driving while black and they do have – you know, a legitimate concern, I would imagine. But when I see somebody being abused, I'm not seeing a black man. I'm seeing a badge in a human being being abused.
Yeah. So, I mean, the numbers essentially say that, like, black people get caught more often doing crimes. Whether or not they're actually the ones doing more crimes is kind of, you know, it's a biased system, right? The only numbers that they can assess are if the cops are in the black areas, and which they are more frequently. And then they are also catching more black people. So, like, I think probably drugs are rampant around every community. I think there are tons of people doing illegal things all over the place, but the police happen to be in black communities more frequently and therefore catch more black people doing black
crimes. You know, this was my experience. I grew up in Central Florida, you know, until I was 12, and we moved, like, in 72. So I was right in the middle of the, you know, civil rights movement and all that, and being and forced busing. And when I was in sixth grade, oh, my God, we had to be bussed, and the parents, everybody's freaking out. And as kids, we're like, what? You know, we didn't know what the big deal was. And it was since then, it was the goal was content of your character. It was to not care if you had you were a different race, not care what your sexual orientation was, not care what bathroom you, not care. You get you train yourself as you go through life to look at, you know, situations. If you try to make a conscious decision for these external superficial things to not matter, and that's a very libertarian thing. You know, what's the content of care? What do you add? What are you doing? What's your, you know, your support of my pursuit of happiness? Blah blah blah. It's not good enough. You have to care,
right.
And you have to care the way I want you to care.
You have to care loudly.
Yeah, you got to care. You know, I'm not racist.
Yeah.
You know, I do. You know,
I'm using that black square on my profile. I
thought I was supposed to not care.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I don't need no stinking ROADs. Where's my freaking flying car? The Jetsons, man. I grew up on the Jetsons. You know, what's the government growing up on the Flintstones?
There are three private companies in New Hampshire that actually sell flying cars.
What?
Yeah. Based in New Hampshire.
That's where I'm going.
Hell yeah.
Where's my bus? Where's that man? Woo! We're going to get some flying car.
I don't know if they can retrofit the bus, but that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be like, you going to the future? Already been there. I got a flying locomotive and back to the future. You know, all of this stuff that's happening, it's refreshing to have someone at 32. How many children do you have?
Two and a half.
You're pregnant?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so you're in. You know, this is like a thing for you.
I'm in the Breed 'em for Freedom program.
You know, that's one thing. We always heard, oh, you can't bring a child into this world. I go, hell, that's why you do it. You breed them out, you know? Mm-hmm. So this is, and the homeschool, when they did all the shutdown stuff, I don't think they realized what was going to happen. People weren't going to crouch in fear as much as they're portraying.
People aren't going to go back to school.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people who were already on the fringe, who were already thinking, like, this isn't right for us. And, you know, now they've had a taste of what it actually looks like, and they're just not going to go back to school.
Kate,
I've seen studies that say 40% of people don't want to go back to school.
Well, don't want to and not to. Well, it doesn't matter. If you're not working, then you might as well stay home with the
right?
kids. Okay, this is the one thing that I'd say on the show a lot. I go, you know, I think a lot, you know, they're portraying in the social media that, you know, parents are freaking out. Oh, my God. Oh, we love you, teachers. We had no idea how hard it was. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking there's a significant portion of people that realize two things. One, they love their kids. They like them. Having them around is kind of whatever. And two, what the hell made you so stupid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, seriously, this is what you've been. what the heck? We didn't send you to daycare for being stupid,
yeah.
You know, and to be stupid. And I'm wondering, what do you think? What do you think the people that have stopped sending them to government schools and they're, you know, homeschooling, you know, they're doing it here. What do they see? That their kids, they like them, they don't like them, they want to keep them, they want to, you know, fix it. What? They thought something was wrong?
I think depending on the age of the kids and the level of independence of the kids, which is, you know, not something they're trained to do in government schools. They're not trained to self-educate. They're not trained to self-direct. They're not trained to go and figure things out when they have questions and use the internet on their own. Anyway, I think that for a lot of people, it's hard to be both working and also, and it's always tough in a transition. But I also have seen a lot of community being built online. You know, I'm in a couple of homeschooling groups on Facebook and various different platforms, and they have exploded with the number of people who are saying, you know, we need resources, we need ideas on how to help to get our kids, you know, up to speed on basic math and education and reading and whatnot. And like, the thing is that, you know, I've seen a lot of these posts that are like, you know, we can't defund the police, but we have been defunding our schools for years. And it's like, well, actually, that's the opposite of what's been happening. Teacher salaries have stayed pretty consistent, but administrative costs have mm-hmm. ballooned. And so I think that this is going to be kind of a tipping point for the education system, because people are learning that they do have a lot of resources that they can access independently. We have the internet. We have all these communities online.
But they're paying the administration teachers to sit there and do nothing anyway.
Right. It's true. And that's the problem with
unions. How are you going to get that money back?
Yeah.
Give me.
I don't know. We got to figure out the tax code for sure.
I give you a personal experience. We had our children, when my oldest, we had like four under four. They were all, you know, bunched together.
That's tight.
And we had the oldest, when she was in third grade, we pulled all the kids out of government school. I said they could stay home and watch Sesame Street and not be worse than this. It's long story why, it was just stupid. They just wanted you to sit and be a potted plant and not, they didn't care as long as you didn't violate someone's self-esteem, learn anything, didn't mean anything. So I'm just going, no, we're done. I'm raising parents to my grandkids and I don't want to be a parent to my grandkids, so this ain't working, so we're out. So we were activists by then. I just knew, well, whatever. Well, then we tried a charter school thing. We did homeschooling for a couple of years, and Donna just wasn't quite into it. I'd love to have done it. Man, if it was me, I'd been all over it. But so she was having a tough time with keeping them, you know, focused or whatever. You don't have to all day. I mean, you just need a couple hours, you know. But then, and we didn't have as many resources back then. So then we went to a charter school, and then started in seventh grade. They went to a Christian private school that we had a lot of input in, and, you know, they did great. So, got great kids. They all doing well. Everything's good. But that one year that they were in the charter school, they have these work or pamphlets or like newsletters called Interscholastic, whatever the hell. It's some magazine, thin magazine thing. And their feature was using the internet. So this is like 03, 04, just when it started getting broadband was kind of getting going. And they had in there, and it was talking about, oh, when you go and you search for bears, well, you do that bear. Oh, but don't put in golden bears. Stop thinking about boats. I mean, you know, don't do golden bears because that will take you in a naughty place. And it was all about these older, hairy, gay men on the beach of whatever the hell. I'm going, what the hell did you tell a kid not to do something? What do you think is going to happen?
I know, really.
So I go, and it was a gay programming thing in using material that they would give to schools to get kids to go with it. So this agenda, what the hell was going on? I saw that telling, you know, junior high, you know, preteen kind of people not to look at something and it takes you off to, you know, old gay guys. I was like, and we're done with them too.
Well, it is, you know, to me, it's like the school has a responsibility to you know, properly educate. But then the parents also have a responsibility to not be afraid of hard conversations. And, like, having a conversation about the spectrum of sexuality, you know, within reason, within...
I don't need the school doing it.
No, no, no. That's the parents' job. I totally agree.
You know, well, of course, we had to have that. You know, my kids are... Like, they raise their kids way more conservative than I did them, you know. They're like, whoa, Dad, we're good, man. We don't need that, you know. And which I agree. I think I probably exposed them to more stuff than they needed to and had these conversations. I don't know. They may be better off or not. It's debatable, but they're not doing their kids that way.
I'm very much into, like, normalize these kinds of things. Like, normalize breastfeeding. It shouldn't be a sexual thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, they have that problem.
Normalize, like, that... Otherwise, how is the human race going to continue? Like, people have sex. That's just, it's part of evolution. It's part of humanity. It's part of your life. Like,
yeah, but
No, but that, I think that's actually part of the problem, right? Like, I don't know, not part of the problem, but I think that desexualizing parents is a weird cultural thing that we do also. Because you should expect as an adult to have an open and honest and communicative relationship with your partner, parentheses. If you don't expect your parents to be having, like, a full-fledged relationship, then you're not going to be able to become an adult in a way that is healthy.
Yeah, it's all, you know, I got a lot of kids and grandkids.
Uh-huh.
Opinions vary, you know?
Yeah, and I haven't reached that point in my parenting life that I really have to make the decision.
You're going to have traumatized kids of therapy if they're going to explain, and you did when I was 12 and you talked about, and I had to, and the Onion report on LRN is talking about blood on I'm so traumatized. You know, so but it all worked out, you know, pretty well. Our kids are doing fine, but yeah. We have a libertarian anarchist parents, how do you rebel? You know, Angela Keaton from antiwar.com, we were talking one time, friends, and she was saying, yeah, I had libertarian parents. How do you rebel?
Yeah.
You know, she tried, but I mean, you know.
Sure.
But this up here, the future, before we go, you're going to be up at Porkfest?
Yes, we're going to be at Porkfest. It's going to be amazing. Tom Woods is going to be there. Jeff Tucker is going to be there. We have a great slate of speakers. And it's going to be real decentralized, too. So if you come and you want to put something together, then we can get it up on the schedule really easily. So it's going to be kind of a throwback year.
Yeah. No, that's the way it used to come. I talk to Carl about this all the time. I go, man, the best speakers used to come from the campground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got the Love Bus there.
Yeah.
We're going to be Love Bus.
It's going to be great. Yeah. And it's all open air, so very low transmission of any diseases.
I am so done with I'm not buying it.
You're not on board? The numbers don't add up for you?
I don't even care.
I don't
know. I go, you know, first thing we did, we got oxygen generator, oxygen level saturation sensor for your finger, chaga mushrooms, a bunch of immune boosting kind of, okay, we're good.
There
if something happens, we got it, and we're done. And other than that, you know, I took care of myself, and I'm not worried.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see bodies stacked up like cordwood, so I was like, heck.
I know what our risk profile is, and I'm going to Porkfest.
Yeah, I'm not. No, I'm an old guy.
Yeah,
I'm gray,
man.
And I don't care. Okay, bring it on. Now my whole thing is I go up to hug, so I give me some COVID.
Yeah, you're a real freedom.